When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
This is your Commander-in-Chief. I'm issuing a warning. The following podcast contains adult content and intended for a mature audience. Listener discretion is advised. Enjoy.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to a brand new MMA Roasted podcast. It's me, Adam Hunter. I got a great team of co-hosts today. I got Marina Shafir.
What's up?
As well as Luke Barnott.
How's it hanging?
It's hanging low, man. And then we have Rob Van Dam, 420, as well as Derek Brunson on the show. It's going to be a great show. We got a good bunch of guests. I did shows all week. I had a show in San Diego, actually, last week, which I think San Diego crowds are the best. If I had to live somewhere in the one place in the world, it would be San Diego, because the chicks are smoking hot.
And way out of your league.
Thank you. I appreciate that, Lucy. I tell you, I'm like Charlie Brown. She fucking removes the football every time I come. No, it's way hot, and it's a kind of like a cool military presence about it. The whole town, everyone's very down to earth. Show was great. I had shows Friday and Saturday. I went for a hike with. It was pretty athletic. I ran a couple miles this week, and then went for a hike with. With the new girl, who's already the ex-girl, but we'll get into that later.
Whoa, happened fast.
We're just better off as friends.
Right.
She's a really great girl. But we went for a hike, and then I ran into the ex-girlfriend on the hike, which was always awkward.
Is she from San Diego?
No, she's from L.A.
She stoked you and went to the same hiking spot.
Yeah, maybe. It was Fryman. It's a cool little hike. It was a pretty relaxing week, though. Lots of comedy shows. It was at Flappers and the Haha and watch Titan fighting, watched UFC fights over the weekend, UFC in Rio, which we're going to talk about, and it was fun. Marina, how was your week?
It was good. I worked and I worked out a lot, just the usual. Something happened to me last week though. I forgot what it was.
That's always great when you forget.
Yeah.
I love that. Normally you say nothing. Yeah. Finally, when you remember about your week, I forget about it. That's always great. Maybe write it down or.
I don't usually like summarize my weeks.
Well, since it's a podcast, which involves us talking into a microphone, people listening on the radio, Right. Maybe you might want to just take a note. Like, hey, this week I did this. Just have one thing, maybe. All right, thanks. So, Luke, it's great having Luke in studio. Luke, how are you?
So good to have Luke in studio.
I'm very well, guys. I'm very well. I could summarize my week.
Yes.
Before we get into anything else.
Sure.
I'm joking. I got to eat, which was nice.
Nice.
In general, because obviously I was meant to be fighting in 2 weeks and everything changed, which we'll talk about in a sec. So I've been stuffing my face all week and eating Cinnabons. I got those Cinnabons that you can actually make yourself. I didn't know these
really
existed. They come in those like tube things.
And yeah.
You pop the tube and then
you've never made those before?
Well, I still haven't. Lucy made them for me.
Do they have those in England?
Not well. If they do, I'm going to hunt them out when I go home.
Okay.
That's like such an American thing.
What, Cinnabons?
Yeah, those Cinnabons, but like all those, also those like little croissant rolls that you can hand make. That's such an American thing.
Yeah, I've never seen it before. And they like come in this tube that like pops.
You should go back and like market it in England. You could become a fucking billionaire.
We're nowhere near as fat in England as you are over here. I don't think that did so well.
That's true. Now, since we last, you were supposed to fight Clint, right?
Yeah.
You're supposed to fight Clint. Now, how far in the training camp were you before to prepare for Clint?
He pulled out with 4 weeks to go. So it was 4 weeks till the fight. And I'd been out in San Diego for about 5 weeks. And I've been training probably two, three before that. But like, my camps have changed a little bit because I used to try and do like a super long camp, like 12 weeks to get ready. Because I actually worked out, I've only been doing mixed martial arts total, like anything. It'll be 6 years in April. So I've only like been doing any sort of martial arts for that long. So I try and train all year round, obviously, to get better like everybody does. But I'm playing catch up with everything. So
right.
I'm always on the mat, always trying to improve, always trying to get better. But my camps, I was like concentrating on one opponent, trying to make it like 10-week camp or as long as possible. Now I've sort of changed that a little bit, and I've tried to make it like 6 weeks of a solid hard, because the training alliance is so intense and the training partners are so tough, and I get beat up quite a lot. It's like I need my body to heal in between those camps.
Right, so you're doing shorter camps.
So I'm doing shorter camps now. So rather than trying to extend them and make them longer, so like I was meant to be fighting. I'd been about 3 weeks into camp. And I had 4 weeks left. So it was
now,
like
you and Clint are friends, right, from The Ultimate Fighter?
Yeah, yeah, we're really, really good friends.
Now, was it hard to get excited for a guy you're friends with?
No. I think there's more on offer. Like, there's more bragging rights when you fight your friends. Like, me and Clint are good mates, and we saw each other a couple of weeks ago. Literally, the week before he pulled out, we were in L.A. together at the Ronda fight, like, drinking tequila, like, toasting.
No way, really?
Toasting to the fight, like, hanging out. And it was, like, pretty cool. And then that week, he pulled out from the fight, which is a bit weird, but he broke his foot. But it was like there's just more on offer. Like if you beat someone that you know quite well, and I'm going to see him a lot, and you know, you got the bragging rights. If you beat some guy you never heard of, and you're never going to run into him.
Yeah,
it's important. Right. So.
But sometimes fighters seem like they have to get mad at the guy to fight him. And if you know the guy, you're obviously not one of those guys. I think British people are more tongue in cheek anyway. That you guys take the piss out of each other, as they say it. So now you're supposed to fight Clint. That backs out, and now. So are you bummed? Did you go out and like eat like crazy? Did you take your girlfriend out for sushi? I mean, what happened
when you? I was pretty bummed when the fight got cancelled. I'd been preparing a lot for it, and Clint has got a style that suits me very, very well. You know, and it's more like the what's going to happen, the mystery. You don't know what's going to happen, so you're like, oh, this could happen, and you start thinking of all these scenarios. You could fight this guy. You look at the division. Who am I going to, you know? And then Joe got in touch with me, and he was like, you're not fighting anyone who's already on the roster. They're already booked up, blah, blah, blah. And he'd find someone else for you to fight. And I was like, so it's going to be another nobody. And I was going to have to fight who no one knows of. There's no like reward for the input. You just another fight that you've got.
Yeah.
And then I started looking up at people that I could be fighting and all that sort of stuff. And I was not down. I was just, just got to wait and see what happens, you know, and see how to take it. And then he rang me up and he was like, right, I've made about 500 phone calls. I've got two people that can fight you. Here are their names. And he gave me the names. I looked them up. I said, yeah, okay, you pick whoever I'll fight, whoever you want me to. And he rang them both, and neither of them could take the fight.
Who were the names?
I can't tell you that.
Oh, come on. Give us the names.
We can't tell you that. I don't know.
Okay.
I can't remember one of them, for one. But the other guy, he was – can you remember his name? We don't know. We can't
David?
Remember.
His name is David?
No, it wasn't
John
David.
Smith.
It wasn't John Smith. I'm trying to think. But he trained out with
CM Punk.
He trained out with Uriah Faber, his camp. I can't remember the guy's name. But he had a family.
Team Alpha Male?
Yeah. He's a middleweight out there. And he had a team holiday. He had a family holiday booked. So that's why he couldn't take the fight, which is crazy, but whatever. So then I said to Joe, I was like, well, I can always be postponed. You know, like I don't mind. I can wait. I know Mark Munoz is going to want to fight in the Philippines. How about that fight? And he was like, no, that's not going to happen. Like, I'll find you someone. I need you to stay on this card because we've already had one person pull out, one fight get dropped. And I was like, fine. He rang me back the next day and he was like, I literally can't find a soul on the planet to fight you. So you're fighting Mark Munoz in the Philippines.
No way.
Yeah. So it was like one of those situations where you don't ask, you don't get. And people are always like, from my feeling of all, obviously coming through The Ultimate Fighter, there's like nine guys that I know pretty well who are all in the same situation as me, like coming up, and they've all like bounced around. There's a lot of fear within that sort of stage when you get in the UFC, like the first year, you don't really know how to take things. It's like anything. Everyone seems like afraid to ask the UFC of anything, you know, to like, they're like, oh, I don't want to upset him. I don't want to say that. And they just realize, you don't ask, you don't get. The worst thing they could say is no. So I was like, give me Mark Munoz in the Philippines, and it happened. You know, if I hadn't have asked, I would have been fighting God knows where against God knows who. You know?
Now, Mark Munoz is coming off, I think, three losses in a row.
Yep.
He's lost his last Friday. I don't even know the guy he lost to. I forgot the guy's name. It was he got choked out by that guy.
Rowan Yanyanya or something.
Yeah, right. Evan, remember that guy's name? Rowan something? The guy that Mark Munoz lost to?
Oh, Carnero.
Yeah, Ron Carnero, right? Mm-hmm. Look at
the brain over there.
You know, but before that it was Machida, or it was before that Musasi, Machida. So three in a row, he's lost. Now, is there a big upside like to fighting this guy other than like, you know, if you beat him, you beat a guy who a lot of people are writing off as a shot fighter. If you lose, you lose to a guy who's going to retire. Is there a big upside? Are you kind of worried about that?
You know, there's. Like you just said, he's going to retire. He's coming off three losses. I'm technically coming off two losses, although I don't feel that way, but I'm still am. So the fight makes sense. He's going to retire, like you said. So losing is a no. You know, it's make or bust in this fight for me. If I lose, I'm out pretty much, because he's going to be out if he lost. So that gives you extra motivation, because whoever I fight next, if I'd be three on the bounce losing, I'm going to be out.
Right.
So it doesn't really matter that way. As for winning, you say he's lost three in a row, but you just said he's lost to Gegard Mousasi and Machida,
right,
who are some of the best fighters in the middleweight division right now. It's not really a bad thing to lose. I mean, the way he lost to Machida was pretty shitty, but, you know, the Gegard Mousasi fight, he showed a few more skills. And yeah, he might be on the down, on the way out, but he still possesses the skills and the talent of a very, very good guy. You know?
Yeah, no, right.
So it's more the way I win than if I win. Like, I feel like I have everything to beat Mark, and I feel like I'm in the right place in my career. I've been training with the right people, and I'm going to win. It's more about the impression is how I win. You know, if I go out there and finish him in the first round, like whatever his face did, Rohan, I can't remember his name, you know, then that says something to me, and it says something to the fans that I'm ready to take a step up to that sort of level of competition. If I go out there and I have a drawn out 3-round decision win that wasn't that great, but the, you know, then I go back to the drawing board. It doesn't really do much for my career. But
now, is he looking at you as like, okay, this guy's 6'6", his weakness is wrestling, he's from England, you know, where they don't even necessarily even have wrestling. Mm-hmm. I could shoot real low on him, take him down, and then donkey punch him. You know that's his plan, right?
Really? No, I thought he was going to stand and play jab for jab. You know, right. That's what I was hoping. Yeah, I mean, it's obvious. It's an obvious game plan for him, an obvious game plan for me. I think I've got like a 7 or 8 inch reach advantage. You know, like I said, I'm 6'6". He's 6 foot, apparently. Yeah. Apparently.
Right.
You know, so I'm also 10 years younger than him. It's like the obvious thing for him to do is take me down and try and do the old Donkey Kong punches, which he hasn't done in a long time. And I'm excited about that because, like you said.
So pretty much you guys are just both going for gold in this fight.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Pretty much. It's a good way of putting it. Like, yeah, we both have our...
You guys are both going on into the next phases of your lives after this fight, pretty much.
And it, for me, it's... Marina makes a joke, and you might not understand what she means, but like for me, it's the start of my career beating Martin Muniz.
Yeah.
Like, it begins. Yep. For him, it's the end. So, like, exactly. You lose a middleweight in the UFC and you gain one, you know? Because mm-hmm. Right now, I've been floating back and forth. There's so many guys in my situation. You beat Martin Muniz, you beat him handedly, people start taking notice, and you can start getting the fights that you want, and you become somebody.
Is that sometimes, though, like, okay, you're just like, okay, not only do I have to win, I have to win handedly. There's a danger in that. You know that, right? Because
I'm going for gold.
Like going for gold, right? Because then what if you take
Why
unnecessary?
Why is there a danger in that?
Because let's say Luke wins. Okay, he jabs him to death. He wins the fight. He does more damage, but he wins ugly. Okay, but he wins. Okay, he's still gonna advance up. He's still gonna go up in the rankings. People know who he is. If he goes for gold, I'm like, I gotta take this guy on the first and starts taking unnecessary risks. He could himself get knocked out.
Yeah.
And
your perspective is, like, very interesting. I'm looking at it as, like, it's your opportunity to, like, really use the tools that you've been harnessing in this last camp.
Mm-hmm.
And he's thinking, I mean that you're just going to go out there and go crazy.
Yeah.
Like, you're – that's not what I'm talking about.
Well, to get a finish in the first round, I mean,
no,
it's not
– you don't have to go crazy.
And it doesn't have to be like – I just said it as an example, but, you know – like I said, I don't have to go out and just throw a flying knee, you know.
Right.
No pun. I don't want to say pun, but intended. I'm not going to go out there and just do something crazy. I'm just going to do what I want to do and do it well, you know. And it's a huge opportunity for me. The fight is a big, big opportunity, and I need to take it, you know. And these are fights like this in your career make or break you, you know. And that's going to be in my head. I'm not going to pretend it's not. And I'm going to use that positively to win, you know. And I want to win every fight handedly. I want to win every fight impressively. I don't go in there thinking, right, I'm going to just, you know.
But don't get into a dogfight. I know that, like, that's the Filipino fans are going to be going crazy.
Yeah.
Okay? He's going to be a star in the Philippines. You're going to be hated.
Yeah.
I mean, worse than the Irish hate you.
Yeah.
people are going to go nuts. They've never seen anybody that big in their life. You're going to be like Shaq out there. You're going to walk out like the fucking – you're going to probably step on 6 Filipinos on the way to the octagon. They're going to go nuts. And they're going to want to see – you get into a crazy dog fight, which is Mark, which I think what Mark wants to do also. And then that's your style of fight. Those are the fights in the past. I don't know. I'm a little nervous, man.
I'm glad you're nervous. I'm glad people are nervous. It's like nerves is just excitement, you know. So if I'm in a dog fight and I come out on top, it's a good fight to watch. People enjoyed it. If I'm not in a dog fight and I land a big shot and finish him, that's great too. Like, it's like I said, for me, it's the beginning of my career. Like, right. I really look at it in that way.
You guys
are
both going to enjoy the fuck out of this fight.
Yeah, and I look at it as a bit of an honor as well to be fighting Mark in the Philippines, like, his retirement. He said it's his retirement fight, you know? Yep. It's a big deal. The guy's been fighting in UFC longer than I've been doing MMA. You know? So he's been around a long, long time, and it's great to be the guy that gets
to retire.
You gotta
stop saying that. Like, you're giving yourself an out. Don't say, I've only been doing it 6 years. And
I mean that. I mean that, you know, as in, like, I said that to, it's, again, your perspective is strange.
It's so strange.
You're so negative about that. Like, me only been doing it 6 years is incredible.
It is incredible. It's amazing.
Yeah, I've only been doing MMA for 4 years.
Okay, that's great. And I've never
done it.
Four
and a half years. But
I'm extremely, no, I think what you did is humble. You can't do basketball for 6 years and be in the NBA.
Yeah.
I mean, you can't be doing baseball for 6 years and be in the major leagues. The fact that like, you're this, like, unathletic, okay, big, slow, gangly dude, and somehow you've made it this far is amazing. But we got to get you top five.
Well, that's the point. That's what I'm trying to say. So the fact that
let him set up your training sessions. That's what he's trying to get at next.
But what I'm trying to say is, a man that's come from, like, you say you've been in MMA for 4 years. Mm-hmm. Before that, I did nothing. I played basketball. I played basketball. I never did a combat sport. I knew nothing about combat sports. My friend who I lived with did MMA. I thought it was cool when I started. You know, that was it. And if I can make that travel, make that distance in 6 years, this is how I look at it, not being a negative fool like you. Like, if I can make that in 6 years, I've only really been doing it for 2.5, you know, 3, like, properly. Give me another 2 years, where can I be? Or
you're gonna be amazing. You're taking very little damage. I mean, you used to sell clothes, right? Weren't you?
I used to sell clothes.
And he was a bouncer, and he used to bang club girls. No offense to his fiance. Okay. I remember.
I'm
gonna
stop bringing her here.
Okay,
but yeah, no. So
no,
the
I'm
point
kidding.
Is,
he didn't bang any club girls. He. Okay, go on.
The point I'm trying to make for all this bullshit is, you know, when I beat Mark, it's like the 6 years that I've had leading up to that fight is like practice. You know what I mean? And now I can begin and I can start making my run to the top five and I can start doing these things that I want to do and be a real personality within the sport. I've had my tuition, I've had my time, I've served my time now, you know. I feel like they've given me the opportunity to fight Mark, and it's a big opportunity to have, you know, for me. So once it's done and finished and I beat Mark, I can start and I can really start living my life. At the moment, everything's just been setting itself up, like, within my life, my training. I've got now the right team behind me, I'm in the right environment, you know. I've pieced all that together bit by bit. Over the last 6 years, I've learned the little things I need to know. I learned how to stop a double leg, which we'll find out. You know, I've learned all these little bits of information that I can now piece together, and I'm well-rounded enough now, and I just have to prove it against Mark, and then people can start believing in me.
All right, last question before we get to Rob Van Dam. Joe Duffy or Conor McGregor, who wins?
You know, we've already had that fight. We already know who wins.
So you think he beats him in the UFC?
Mm-hmm.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
You think Joe, both of you?
Yes.
Why? How does
why
he win?
Why are you, like, really? Relax. Yes, that is my opinion.
Yeah, but why? Why
because
does Joe Duffy?
What's your opinion? Obviously, you disagree.
Jesus.
I have not seen enough of Joe Duffy. I've only seen him fight that one time.
Joe Duffy, I've known Joe a little while. You know, very, very experienced guy. Was a professional boxer. Went away from mixed martial arts. Did his boxing. He beat Conor on the ground with a side choke in about 34 seconds or whatever it was, and now he's gone and developed his stand-up game. At the moment, I never actually answered the question. At the moment, I feel like it would be a very good matchup. We've already seen the fight than Joe won, but now the thing that I believe brings a difference to the cage and to the fights is momentum. You know, momentum. There was a thing, you know, the presence that you have when you fight, what you come forward with and what you believe in can be much more than your physical attributes. Physically, against each other right now, we've seen a physical fight because when there was no hype behind it and they fought in a cage, Joe Duffy won. Now when you have the hype, you have the build-up, you have the Conor show, you have all that sort of stuff, he is a dangerous man in the cage against Joe, and I think it would be a different story because I'm not sure if Joe can handle that sort of pressure that Conor brings. I think that's how Conor is very well at defeating his opponents. He comes with such... I don't know how he can, like... Magnet is the wrong word, but he can control this pressure that he has, like this.
He focuses really, like, what I'm starting to notice in fighters who are on a completely different level, for example, Ronda, their focus, all of their energy, all of their senses are put into winning. And when you see that, you see everything that's coming at you. You're not just like one-minded. You're very like you just see everything that's happening. And there's a lot of fighters when you see, you know, when they zoom in and Bruce Buffer is announcing their names, you can see in their faces. You can really see in their faces if they're there and they're present and they're in the fight. And there's a lot of people who aren't. And you can tell right off the bat. Yeah. And Conor McGregor is invested 100%, 100%.
So you think he beats Joe Duffy?
Yes.
You, 2 seconds ago, you said Joe Duffy wins.
No, I didn't.
Yes, you did. I was right here.
I think maybe she'll confuse what I said.
No, you said Joe Duffy beats Conor McGregor 2 seconds ago.
No, I didn't. Did I say that?
Yes.
I think so.
I meant it the other way around.
Oh, whatever.
Sorry.
Oh, come on. Play the tape.
So, yeah, like being able to control that momentum and that shift and the way.
So you think Conor McGregor wins the fight?
Right now, I think he would, yeah, 100%. Okay. But, like, when the hype dies down for Conor, because eventually it has to, after Conor
gets the first loss.
Yeah, then it might change and then we might be in a different. But right now, I think Conor believes he's unbeatable. And that's what makes him win the fights the way he's winning the fights. Not his actual attributes or his skill set.
So he beats Aldo?
I don't think so. Because I think Aldo's got the same. I think Aldo's got the he can stop that, you know, I believe. But, you know, I think that's what's taken him so far. And I think if he fought Joe, that's how it would turn out.
All right. Well, we're going to call Rob Van Dam. Then we're going to go over UFC Fight Night in Rio. Did you guys watch Titan FC at all?
I didn't. No, I didn't.
Boy won. Brett Johns won.
Yeah. I know.
He's now the champion.
I saw it on I watched it on Twitter, if that makes
sense. Okay, we're going to talk about that a little bit. There were some good fights in that. What's the name lost? Our buddy Cody Bollinger.
Yeah, I watched that fight.
We're going to talk to Rob Van Dam, get back. We're going to talk about Ronda versus Betch Correa. We got a lot of stuff to talk about, but let's talk to Rob Van Dam right now.
Hello.
Hey, is this Rob Van Dam?
Sure is.
What's up?
You're on the MMA Roasted podcast. It's Marina Shafir and Luke Barnott along with us. We are talking to a guy right now who is the only guy to win titles in ECW, WWE, as well as TNA Wrestling, the 3-time world champ, 5-time world tag team champion, 6-time intercontinental champion. Mm-hmm. Rob Van Dam, how are you, man?
Dude, sounds like I'm pretty exciting.
Yes. Yeah,
all
yes.
All good, man. It's all good. I'm in Las Vegas at the moment. I actually just did MMA Junkie. Are you familiar with that show?
Yes. A good guy. Gorgeous George. Nice guy. Real nice guy. And the Goats. Yeah. Super great people. So, and you're also... Now, I hear you're a stand-up comedian now?
Well, it's something that I do. I mean, to say it like that, you know, I don't know if I put that label on me, but yes, I do, therefore I am.
Nice. So that's great. I'm also a comedian. I'd love to actually perform. We have a mutual friend in Bruce Jingles. So
okay, right on. Yeah. Yeah, I've actually done this. I think I started in 2006, so I've actually done it over the course of quite a few years, but I don't do it that often. Sometimes 4 months go by in between you know, a gig, but lately there's been a lot more of it, and I have a lot more time since I'm not spending as much time on the road wrestling. So it's cool. Unlike some thoughts that people may have, or I don't know what the other wrestlers' intentions are that do stand up, like Foley and Piper, those guys. I don't know, but I can tell you, I'm not looking to cross over. I'm not looking for like another career path. It's just fun for me. It's as an artist. I enjoy the outlet of expression. It's mentally stimulating for me, whereas wrestling is not anymore. And so I enjoy it, and it's just fun.
Now, I mean, well, that's cool, man. If you ever want to gig together, let me know. I would be honored, man. I was looking at some of your old wrestling videos from last time. I was looking through about your stuff. Now, you seem to have a lot of karate. What's your actual martial arts background?
Okay, so here it is. I got into martial arts through wanting to be a wrestler, so it's kind of came around full circle. So there's a guy in Battle Creek, Michigan, and where I grew up, me and my friends who were wrestling fans that knew what we wanted to do, and this guy had a ring, so we had to figure out how we're going to be able to get in this ring, because we're wrestling on the living room, couch cushions that we throw on the floor. So we knock on the guy's door and we say, dude, yeah, we're going to be wrestlers when we grow up. We want to get in the ring there and work out. And so what he does is he has us come over to work out. But what we don't know until we get there is that we have to go through his kickboxing classes first, the stretches, the drills, eventually the sparring, because he's a kickboxer and a kickboxing promoter. And then after the fighters left for the day, then the wrestlers could have the ring to work out. So that got me into martial arts. I found out that I was really good at it. I knocked everybody else out, and I could take a tremendous amount of punishment. And then so I enjoyed kickboxing and wrestling. While I was training to be a wrestler with the original Sheik, I actually thought that maybe I would go pro kickboxing if wrestling didn't work out. But to supplement the kickboxing, I soaked up everything in town. So we had three dojos. One taught American karate and also kendo. And Aikido. So I went there, and I think that was on like some coupon that my mom had, like a coupon book they used to sell, and they'd have like 2-3 weeks or whatever. Whatever it was, I was sneaking in. I was going to tournaments, sneaking in, and wasn't even trained yet, so I had a hunger for it. But anyway, to finish your question, also Tang Sudo, Taekwondo, later in life, some Yoshukai, Kaju Kenbo, which is one of my favorite arts, very little Tang Sudo, and now when I work out, it's usually Jiu-Jitsu with Justin McCauley, the MMA fighter.
Oh, nice. I love that guy. Now, did you have any actual, so you had some actual kickboxing fights?
Yes, and these shows were at bars, and sometimes like outdoor festivals where they'd have bands and stuff. So it was like a party kind of atmosphere. So I was paying my dues when I was like, I don't know, 16 years old. We would actually set the ring up, set the chairs up, open up the show with a wrestling match. We hadn't been trained yet, but we choreographed our own match, which I've never been able to find footage of that. I would love to see this. But then afterwards, sometimes I would have a fight that might be scheduled, and then sometimes even an extra fight afterwards, because there'd be somebody in the crowd drinking that says, oh, I can kick these guys' asses, let me in there. And I was the guy, you know, talking to Kit, our coach, you know, saying, dude, let me have him. And I had that hunger. I wanted to fight. I wanted to get better. You know, I wanted to improve. I wanted to test myself. And so I was doing all that early on. The only thing I got paid for was the Tough Man contest, Kalamazoo, 1990. I was 19 years old, just turned 19, and I entered the Tough Man contest because that was like the big deal in the Midwest. Who's the toughest man in town? And I took second place, which was pretty good for my first time. The guy, Emmanuel Yarborough, who took first place, it was like his, he travels around, and it was like his 23rd contest.
Wow.
And I went toe-to-toe with him, so I felt at that point like I could do anything.
Emmanuel Yarborough was like, what, 450 pounds or something? That was the huge guy, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, very big guy.
Now, when these guys in the crowd would want to fight you after the thing, did you ever lose to those guys, or did you just knock out random guys in the crowd?
No, just knocked them out.
Is that, these guys were so, I could
we
take
fought, these. Yeah, we fought with 16-ounce gloves. And we had headgear on, and we had foot pads on.
Dang.
And I just did not think it was possible to knock me out at that time. In fact, still today, with all my physical attributes, I've only been out, completely out one time in my life, and that was in a situation out of the ring. I wasn't a pro yet. This was on the street. I used to, you know, part of testing myself was in a in unorganized fashion, you know, which any kids listening, you know, this is a bad idea. But I used to want to get in street fights just for the challenge. Like, I wasn't a bully, but I wanted to find other people who were bullies, people that wanted to fight, that thought they were tough. I was challenging them. And I had a ring in my backyard And I told all the kids at school I would fight, I'll box you, I will kickbox you, I will wrestle you, anything. And I just wanted them to come out so I could test myself and so that I could grow from it.
Wow, that's amazing. I saw one time last night, I was watching a thing where you had Bam Bam Bigelow in the crowd. You were on the top rope, and you jumped into the crowd. He was like on a table. Or so. How the hell did you choreograph that?
The thing is, the more experienced wrestlers that you have, you don't have to choreograph anything. And that's a perfect example because people that don't wrestle, they don't really understand how it works. And of course not. How could they? But, you know, a lot of them want to just mark it all off as if we're just all friends. We're all just playing, whatever. Truth of the matter is, it's live action. It's happening on the moment in front of the people. And you don't first say, well, let me stand on the top rope and just dive over the guardrail and see if I can make it into the fifth row, because that will kill you if you do it one time. So that's one of those moves that you just have to go for it. And a lot of moves are like that. And when there's two veterans in the ring, by the way, you don't even have to necessarily know what's going on. When I used to wrestle The Undertaker, we wouldn't say one word before the match. Nothing. Not one move, one spot, nothing. So it's crazy for me now to see that where the business has gone, where it's changed, and how people perceive it is almost being easier than it is.
Now, were you and Bam Bam good friends?
Bam Bam, yeah, we were good friends. I had a lot of respect for him. One of the things that I really liked about him was he was a receiver. And in the wrestling business, a receipt is when you give back what you just got. And I was known for being one of the snug guys. You know, some people might call me stiff. And I knew for sure, even though Bam Bam was really cool, I knew during the match, like if I cracked him with a chair and it was like extra hard, or say I caught his elbow or the back of his head and I didn't mean to, oh, shit. Oh, sorry, I don't know if I can say that.
Yeah, you can swear.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. I knew for sure when I did that, a receipt was coming back. And Bam Bam, you know, he might be leaning over a table, and I'm like slamming him on the back with a chair, and then, here it comes. He would grab the table, turn around, just throw it at me, and then after that, we're cool again. Mm-hmm. but for the moment, he would always let me know, like, if I gave him something a little extreme, I was getting it back.
Now, I remember Bam Bam fought Kimo in Japan. He got beat up pretty bad. But then I read it. I saw an interview with him. He said he actually threw the fight. He got paid $100,000 to throw the fight. Did he ever tell you anything about that?
No, we never talked about that. You know, the shoot/work matches that they do in Japan are kind of crazy to me, because I watch fighters like in UFC, and part of what I enjoy about it is seeing these guys go for it, those big wild swings. They're putting everything into these punches, hoping to connect and knock out, and there's no denying that, you know, when someone's really going for it, trying to win. And then, you know, in Japan, they'll mix that up with some pro wrestling, you know, and you see some guys stuck in a leg lock on the mat for 15 minutes, and it's like, it's hard to take, like, for me personally, but I guess the fans are accustomed to it. I don't know.
Have you ever seen some of the chick matches in Japan?
No.
Holy shit. Like, that is some... That is unchoreographed professional wrestling. These chicks are doing...
Very physical.
Yeah, like crazy flips off of the ropes.
Really?
Like, oh my... It's some crazy jumping jiu-jitsu bullshit. I've never seen anything like it. No. What they do with their bodies, what happens to their body, like they will land on concrete.
Wow.
And they'll just keep wrestling.
Now, Rob, what was it like working with Brock Lesnar?
Brock was, first off, very athletically gifted. You know, the first time I was in the ring with him, I instantly became a fan of his. I recognized him as a freak of nature. One, because he's as strong as the Incredible Hulk. And two, he's just got the prowess of a lion. He's got like the balance, like everything about him. I just, I instantly, you know, knew he was the real deal. And when he went to UFC, I personally thought for a while there, like, oh my God, there's not going to be anybody that can beat him. And then, you know, when Frank Mir used that that knee bar, it really meant a lot and reminded me how important technicality is and how, you know, like someone can slip up and with enough, you know, a technician like Frank Mir, bam, he only gives you that one chance to screw up, and he took advantage of it. And sometimes you just, you know, when you put it on paper and you put in the odds, you can't imagine something like that happening. So that's, again, that's what's so awesome about MMA and about these guys, like, you know, really, really put 100% on the line and going for it. Always been a big fan.
But was Brock cool? Was he easy to work with and everything?
Yeah, Brock has always treated me with nothing but respect.
Yeah, I mean, Brock, your match with Brock last night, I was watching that too. That was that was hilarious. I mean, you've beaten some of the best guys in wrestling. I mean, The Rock, Brock Lesnar, Triple H. You've at one point you were really on top of the world as far as wrestling goes.
Can I ask a question?
Sure.
Really quick. Do you remember Wrestle Reunion?
Yes.
What did you think of your match with Chris Hero and Roderick Strong?
I thought it was a decent match. It was somewhat typical, except for it being a three-way match. But both of those guys were good. The crowd knew who they were. I myself wasn't as familiar with them, but you could tell the way the crowd took to them, you know, that they were very connected. And the crowd, you know, was excited, looked forward to seeing the whole thing. So you could tell that they were having a good time. The way
right.
they chant, you know, you're not letting it down. So
yeah,
it was cool. I hadn't been in the ring for a minute prior to that. So for me, it was kind of about that too, getting back in there and doing my thing.
Now, do you follow like PWG or any of the like the local underground shows still or no?
I don't follow any of it.
Really? Oh, that's a bummer.
I also don't watch WWE. In fact, I don't even watch myself anymore. And that's not
badass.
Something fans want to hear. Fans don't want to hear that because it disconnects me from them, and they want to know what I thought about, you know, Monday night, whatever the hell happened. But truth is, that's one of the things that's always kept me different is the fact that unless I'm there at the arena seeing what's going on, then I'm like in another world. And hopefully that makes me fresher. If not, then whatever. I'm not really looking to prove myself anymore.
Now, how do you think CM Punk's going to do in the UFC?
Better than people are expecting, because right off the bat, everybody wants to dog him. Everyone's like, dude, he's going to find out, you know, that you don't just cross over and go to MMA. Of course not, and he knows that, and he's not going to fight until he's ready. That seems to be something that everybody overlooks. I mean, he's going to train. He is training, and he's going to wait until he feels like he's ready, and then he's going to fight. So he'll have as good of a chance as any other fighter. And then on top of that, because everyone's so excited about this, he's going to draw some money, and he's going to make some money for UFC, and they're going to pay him for it too. So, you know, that's something that doesn't necessarily happen with WWE. I mean, even if you're drawing, you know, thousands of fans and they all have signs that have your name on it and stuff, that doesn't mean that's going to equate to you getting a fair portion of the pie that night.
Do you think that they kind of screwed you over as far as money goes?
Oh, I've never been one of their chosen few. Like, they have certain guys that they take care of, John Cena, you know, Randy Orton. There's a few guys. And the amount of money that those guys make compared to the amount of money that other guys that are doing basically the same job is like night and day. Like, you know, outsiders wouldn't believe that they even have the same career. But that's just the way it is and the way it always has been. You focus on certain guys. Those are the guys that you put, that you invest in with the merchandise, with the sponsorships, with the movies, all of that. And then it pays back. The other guys, I mean, let's face it, wrestlers travel three or four to a car so they can split the expenses. A lot of them split the cost of the hotel rooms and stuff. And I don't know if they really have to or if it's more for companionship. But, you know, traditionally that's part of, and especially when you're starting out, And when you're, you know, trying to get your momentum going, you kind of need that. I go the opposite. I travel by myself and have for most of my career. And you know, then it's like I don't have to worry about compromising, going to the gym when other guys want to, or stopping to eat where they want to, any of it. Even conversation. I don't have to, you know what I mean? Like I'm in control. But in order to do that, I mean, I have to make a certain amount of money so that I can facilitate that. You know what I mean? There's a lot of expenses on the road. And then because you're an independent contractor, you can also get your expenses taken care of in your contract if that's how you want to do it.
Now, at one point, you were actually traveling on the road with Sabu, and you got caught with weed and Vicodin, right?
Yeah, 18 grams of marijuana, and I think they found the people forget about the Vicodin, and I did too. That was just a bullshit thing anyway. I just didn't have it in the prescription bottle, so I had to follow up with that. And, you know, it was like I think it was like two pills or something. Whatever it was, anyway. Yes, true. I got pulled over in Hanging Rock, Ohio, and my car smelled like Humboldt, California.
No. Afterwards, you were then known as like the 420 fighter. So was that one of the best things that happened for your career? Was getting caught all that weed?
I think before that, you know, people knew me and associated me with marijuana because it was way back in the ECW days that I first saw the RVD 420 signs, and when I did the High Times magazine interview, and that was really what stuck on people's minds and associated me with Bud. You know, by the time I got busted in Ohio, I already had been pretty active in advocating the legalization of marijuana, and then with that, you know, that threw me into it even further. You know, a lot of people, politically correct third party entities, will go out and make an apology on my behalf for a horrible mistake. I've never done that. You know what I mean? I got busted, whatever. But the truth is, I know more about marijuana and the laws than probably anybody that you're going to talk to. And I've been on Geraldo Rivera, I've been on Daniel Madigan, I've debated with you know, former drug czar Barry McCaffrey. I mean, I know a lot about it. And the thing is, back then it was a lot more looked down upon, it meaning marijuana, because people have been brainwashed to believe it's just something dirty that you say no to. But the truth is, there's so much more to that. And right now, today, the majority of American voters believe it should be legal. We have 23 states plus the District of Columbia that have medical programs. We have 4 states plus the District of Columbia that have recreational usage. And in the next 2 years, we're going to be up to like 15 states that treat marijuana like alcohol. So the thing is, I knew that that I was putting my energy into the right movement that I believed in. But right now, the momentum and the leverage is on my side. I mean, back then, people didn't want to hear it, or they thought that you were crazy if you said some of the things that now people accept as fact.
Yeah, back then, they looked at marijuana as like in society, it was like a really dirty, poor thing to do. Like, upper class people don't do that.
Right.
They stick to cocaine, you know, top shelf liquor, and that's it. But now everything, you know, everybody's starting to realize that everything is ass backwards.
Right.
And now, I mean, especially living in LA, you see people who look like they're dressed in rags, but apparently those rags cost like, I don't know, $500 and shit, and they're like the richest people. So everything is backwards nowadays.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Now, finally, I gotta ask you a last question. So I know there had to been back in the day when you were coming up. I know you're a married man now and all that, but before that,
they told me you were gonna ask this.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
I know you gotta. How many ECW groupies? How many WCW chicks? I mean, you must have just went crazy. Am I right?
You are not right with that, actually.
Oh, really?
At first, By the way, I mentioned this earlier too. When I was in WCW, you weren't allowed to bring your girlfriend or wife anywhere near the arena. That's how the business has changed. Mike Graham implemented that rule with us. His dad, you know, Eddie Graham back in the day, passed that on to him. And that was because they believed in the sexual value of the baby faces and actually thought that they could pack the arenas with screaming female fans, which, you know, maybe they used to, I don't know. Dude, I get asked, this is something I just said on stage, the other day for the first time. I tried this one out. So I've been asked how I remain such a faithful husband in all my years of pro wrestling. You know, being on the road, having pussy thrown at you. And my reply was, have you seen the wrestling fans?
Oh, it's rough?
It's not rock and roll. I've seen some stuff, you know, for sure. And I'll write about all of it in my book. And I've had a lot of fun. But, yeah, I mean, when it comes to... specifically what you're asking, there's not too many stories out there about RVD and groupies. Now, when I first got in 1990-91 and I was, you know, just not even old enough to drink, that was one of the biggest benefits of getting into the business. I remember in Tennessee, we would, after the arena, we would go to the hotel that was across the line in Jefferson, Indiana. Anyway, there was this Days Inn, and four of us would split a $28 room. That's how rich we were back then.
Wow.
And when we would, after the show, we would go back to the hotel, and there would be a bunch of fans, most of them girls, all over the hotel. Like there was a swing set, like a little playground, and they were hanging out, wanting to hang, to talk to us and wanting to bribe us with beer. So for a young man, that was like that was pretty good getting into that.
Yeah, so back in the day, it was good. And you know, it's finally, I actually didn't realize that you were the guy in the Million Dollar Man promo that kissed his foot. I remember watching that as a kid, where he goes, "I'll give like $1,000 to anybody that will kiss my foot," and that was you.
Well, but unfortunately, it was only $100.
Which is crazy. So Rob Van Dam.
Yeah, I was the worst negotiator because I could have held out for, I was supposed to. That's what everybody does, is you hold out and he proves his point by finding your price. But mine, yeah, I was so excited just to be in the ring. So I know you're ending this. Let me just say back to the marijuana. I could talk for hours about that, but let me tell you, your listeners, a few things that they might not know. Marijuana is a Schedule I controlled substance, has been since 1970, thanks to Richard Nixon, meaning the most dangerous, the most harmful on the planet. That's marijuana, along with heroin and acid. Schedule II, meaning safer for you, better for you, meth and cocaine.
That's
so
ridiculous.
When you talk about things being backwards now,
yeah.
This has always been backwards, and people just don't know it. If you look up the Controlled Substance Act, you'll say, oh, my God. He's right. The federal government tells you that cocaine and meth are better for you than marijuana because marijuana has zero medicinal benefit, according to the federal government. However, at the same time, they have a patent on the medicinal properties from marijuana, and they made a pill called Marinol, which is 100% THC, that they give to patients, they sell to patients. So that's the hypocrisy right there that I'd like to point out. And also, people ask me this all the time. When are they going to realize that we can make so much money off of taxing marijuana? As soon as they realize that, it'll be legal everywhere. Not true. The reason that marijuana is prohibited is because it takes profit from the big businesses. The elite few that run the world do not want to see marijuana utilized because it could replace up to 80% of pharmaceuticals. It could replace fuel, alcohol, and cigarettes. Forget about it. They're gone. And then you also have the medicinal. You also have the material, you know, which is there's over 25,000 products that can be made from this amazing, most resourceful plant on the planet. So as long as alcohol, tobacco, pharmaceuticals, oil, along with textiles, cotton, and lumber, as long as all these big companies can stand together and spend billions and billions and billions of dollars, they're going to keep the fight going on. Right now, on a morality clause, the voters are seeing this through, and so that's why it's shifting. But believe me, the higher ups, the big conglomerates, the evil profiteers of our society, those people that belong way up there and at the very top of the 1%, they're the ones that don't want to see marijuana legal, and it's not for the right reasons.
So Rob Van Dam is pro weed. Thank you. Thank you so much for coming on the show, brother. It is an honor to have you on the show.
By the way, the Four Horsewomen, we absolutely love you. We fucking love you. We went crazy at WrestleMania, and we fucking love you.
Rob, May 1st, I'm headlining the Improv. Do you want to do a spot on it?
May 1st, that's in L.A., that
yeah,
Improv?
Yeah, the Hollywood Improv.
Maybe. I don't know. I mean, it's like, I mean, because I've been headlining. First off, they pay me now.
Oh, okay. All right.
Second off, I'm headlining. I do like a 30-minute set. It's not as easy to go up and do 7 minutes. Or as incentivizing is the right way to put
right.
it. You know? But we'll talk about that. My website, robvandam.com, is supposed to be launching with a whole new face this week. So if you go there, you can keep up with all my social media and everything that's going on with me.
Well, thanks a lot, Rob. Thanks for coming on the show, brother.
Thank you.
Right on, guys. Take care. Have a great day.
You too.
All right, that was Rob Van Dam. He's the guy's hilarious.
Love that guy.
I think we need to change the logo for the show. Instead of clutching a microphone, we need to be clutching a marijuana.
A big fat joint.
Yeah,
very, very. The guy knows his stuff, though. I would hate to be to try to debate against that guy. I mean,
he should be. Yeah, yeah. He should like really, or he is already like going in that direction with his life.
Yeah,
like being an ambassador for marijuana.
It's amazing
not
how
a bad job.
Yeah, amazing how agile he could be while stoned too.
That's what we call productive potheads.
Really? Are you a productive pothead?
No.
Oh, interesting. So let's talk about the fights that happened on Saturday. I know. Let's talk about your roommate, your ex roommate, Shayna Baszler against Amanda Nunes. That was rough. That was rough to watch. I was pulling for Shayna.
We were all pulling for Shayna.
I like Amanda. It looked like
there was a lot of respect at the end of that fight, and that's all I can commemorate. Like that's the only thing I can really, you know. I was expecting a lot of attitude and a lot of hoopla after the fight, and it was pure respect. And
but what happened to Shayna? It seemed like
that first oblique kick hurt her.
Yeah.
And it had her backing up, and something when she you saw her knee buckle the first leg kick, and her ankle's fucked up. So my first worry was that. And
her ankle's already fucked up going into the fight?
Well, no, like she had a bad ankle.
Right.
And unfortunately, when you get kicked really hard, it's not really your knee. I mean, it is your knee.
She had a bad ankle going into the fight or during the fight?
No. Like, it wasn't an injury. She's always had a bad ankle.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So that's what you can immediately see in her face. Like, as soon as she caught that first kick, you wanted to see, like, her shrug it off and just be like, fuck it. Like, and you saw she went for a shot and just couldn't keep up.
What did you think, Luke?
I haven't seen it.
Awesome.
I'm going to be honest. I haven't seen it. No, I had a pretty busy weekend, and I caught the fights. I've caught some of the fights, but not all of them.
Nunez is a beast. I think she's a problem for anybody in that first round. In that first round, she completely demolished
Zingano.
Kat Zingano. Yeah. Kat Zingano. I mean, that first round was almost stopped. She also beat Jermaine de Randamie. Killed her in the first round, too. You looked so how good Jermaine won, also. It's almost like she kind of gasses in the second and third.
She's
and
just got that kind of style where Amanda is really, if you look at her, all of her fights, she is very explosive, but she's one-dimensional. She really is a one-dimensional fighter. She's a stand-up fighter. And if you can break that, if you can just keep that pressure on her and just be in that pocket, There's no way she can land anything strong. She needs the distance to land a powerful punch. That's the type of fighter she is. You can see with all of her striking, she maintained a really healthy distance, even with Shayna.
Yeah.
And was landing some good strikes on her. But as soon as you put that pressure on her, she's not going to be – I can guarantee you she's not a good counter striker.
Her speech lasted, like, longer than the fight. Yeah. Honestly, her speech she kept going her. On.
I don't know how the translator was going to backtrack and then
He just said she wants to thank a lot of people. Yeah. He just, honestly, I swear to God.
No, it was 15 minutes.
They should make it like the Oscars where, like, music goes over, like, in the Oscars. People, their speeches go on too long. And they should do that with fighting.
They, like, blink a light in the back and they're like, okay, your time is coming.
Fighting to start playing like some kind of theme music or something.
Did she grab the mic or something?
You know what it was? You know, it was like she kept going and it wasn't like a Joe Rogan who kind of is an expert at kind of cutting people off. You know, when it's someone speaking Portuguese, they have no idea what they're saying.
And it's John Anik.
John Anik doesn't know when to cut off. By the way, John Anik's hair now is completely white. It looks. Somebody said that John
More
Jones.
More salt than pepper.
Somebody said that John Jones was going to start snorting his hair. Guess how white it was.
Was that you?
No. Yeah. No. Somebody tweeted it to me. But I personally, I think Anik does a great job. I have no issues with any of the announcers, especially if they're great. The announcers are great. That was great. There was also the main fight, which was Ryan LaFerre versus Damian Maia.
There was a couple of tweets coming out from your account.
Yeah, I was saying how it was boring and how Maya's back of his shorts fell asleep and how LaFleur is now pregnant. But look, Damian Maia, like they say going into it, there's fighters and there's mixed martial artists. And Maya's a mixed martial artist. He actually said in one of his quotes, I like beating guys without having to hurt them. He's not a very violent guy. He's a very finesse guy, and I think he did exactly what he should have done.
I think that's right in a way, but I think his style has definitely changed with age because he went through a stage where he tried to be a bit more of a stand-up fighter. I don't know if you remember that.
Yeah, that was awful.
Yeah. But at least he gave it a go. So, like, he tried to be a hurtful stand-up fighter, try to go come in guns blazing and then look for the takedown, and it didn't work out for him. Like you said, he didn't look that great. And now he's getting older and older and older, and I think he's just fighting the way his body allows him to without taking the damage he took when he tried to be a stand-up
fighter. Yeah, the stand-up fighter. I mean, him and Weidman, that stand-up fight was crazy. That was probably actually Weidman's closest fight was against Damian Maia. I think Weidman cut 30 pounds before that fight. Yep. But, you know, he got knocked out by Nate Marquardt. And I know the fans were angry. I do think it's a mistake to have him headline a card because – you know, more than not, he's going to have a pretty boring fight. And I understand.
And gas is now an issue with him. Well, maybe his last few fights.
I understand. Yeah. It's in Brazil. He's Brazilian. He's a draw. You want to have him there. It's the Rio card. They're all going to be there to support him. So you have Damian Maia headline. But really, has he ever been in an exciting fight? Ever? No. He's never really been in an exciting fight. He's been in great fights. He shows dominance. He's got great jiu-jitsu.
He's been in technical.
His takedowns are amazing.
Yeah.
I mean, the fact that, like, Ryan LaFleur, who's a good collegiate wrestler, got taken down every single round by a guy from Brazil who's probably never wrestled in college. But that's how athletic. I mean, granted, it's a different style of wrestling, but his takedowns look great. So, you know, he looked very impressive. I get it. He probably shouldn't have headlined that card.
Can we talk about the terrible stoppage that happened?
We could talk about that. Sure, we could talk. Whatever. It's a podcast.
I know. I know that that's on the forefront of my mind right now.
She's getting upset. She's
no, because that was fucking bad.
Crazy.
By the way, people, before you know it, before the podcast started, I was looking at Marina's arms.
God damn it.
And she goes, "Stop looking at my arms." Like, it was as if, like, you're checking out a girl's tits, but, like, you're not. And she's like, "My eyes are up here." It was which Evan the Beard pointed out. Your arms are very round and pointy.
She came from strength conditioning, though.
God damn it.
You have very perky arms. You have a you're gonna have to start wearing a bra on your arms. But so, yeah, what were we saying?
Too far.
Okay.
We're talking about the terrible stoppage.
The referee stoppage.
There needs to be instant replay in MMA. That would solve this. Come on.
But how would it solve it?
Yeah, like
it was a phantom.
That guy needs to be fired, and that solves the problem. You know, like it's a terrible.
He should never ref another fight.
But he's not going to be fired.
But he should be.
He should be. But
how does instant replay? Okay, instant replay. They put up a little replay. Oh no, he didn't tap. Okay, let's start you back in the same position.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah, that's exactly what they should have done.
That's not the sport, though. That's
come on. They do it in every other sport. I mean,
yeah, like football, and they don't do it in what? Give
you should
me
have one instant replay.
Sport.
The whole
one...
point of MMA is to transition, and you evolve to the situation.
Yeah.
So like if they had instant replay, they would look at the replay and be like, well, they wouldn't start them in the same position. They wouldn't start. They would have to just restart the whole fucking thing.
Okay, well, but that's still better than ending the fight. You look at the other alternative: is a guy, you end the fight, the guy didn't tap, it wastes everyone's time. The people that bet on what's the name get totally screwed because he didn't. Yeah. I mean, you know how pissed I'd be if that was my parlay and that was the one fight.
I think
they
should be put onto the next immediate card and have a rematch.
They should, but I think
because they're still in fight
shape. But instant replay would solve that. Same goes for eye pokes or even that, like, you know. I don't know. I just feel like...
No, it's definitely an argument. We're not, you know, like, instant replay could be useful, but it's just there's so many situations where it just makes it harder work than it was.
Well, you do it like football, where you have one instant replay call per fight or something, or, like, the coaches can call an instant call flag, or... Evan doesn't see it. There should be an instant replay on times like that where the referee clearly screws up.
All right, Adam, you want to call instant replay on whatever happened in a fight, submission, tap, whatever. How long do you think that takes from you throwing in your flag or whatever to call these replay to actually getting, you know, played on the video to the guys communicating with
evaluating
each other, to evaluate
2 minutes.
2 minutes?
2 minutes.
Dude, 2 minutes in TV is a fucking it is a year.
Yeah.
You missed a commercial.
So play the All About the Cake video. The All About the Cake. You play the All About the Cake video with Daniel Cormier. Everyone's laughing. We're all in good moods. All about that cake and chicken. You tell me you wouldn't want to see that. Or play my MMA Roasted video instead.
You got to play the instant replay so people can see what happened. That's the whole point.
You can hear my jokes. You can play Adam Hunter's stand-up comedy. I'm telling you, people will be entertained.
Just the purely logistical reason why it doesn't work. Yeah. Commercials.
Well, no, they have They have 5 minute injury timeouts.
Oh, okay, and also, fine. You want to bring extra minutes into the mix. So now, does this also count as like a 2 minute break for both of the fighters?
Exactly.
What if one guy's gassed as shit, throws in your card? I call instant replay on something.
Yeah.
It would be under the referee's discretion to have instant replay.
Well, the referee's
the
guy that's
fucking idiot.
There would be another referee. There would be an instant replay ref. A guy.
What are they going to have, like, a fucking referee little council on the side? Yes. They can go fuck themselves because I've dealt with referees in judo, and they can all just go fuck themselves.
We can have them fucking themselves on the side. Actually, have them fucking.
It's bad refereeing, bad judging, bad, like, that's, you know, it needs to just grow. And like you said, that guy never should be able to referee a fight again. And that you've got good refs in the sport and you've got bad refs in the sport, and they need to be it's tough luck for the guy. I know it sucks, and the guy's lost a fight, and they're talking about now they gave them 14 days to question the decision. They won't overturn that decision. He would have lost that fight. It won't go down as anything else, because you can't overturn that decision. If you look at the rules and you go through it, you'll see in the next couple of weeks there'll no way they'll overturn it, which is wrong. But the sport needs to come up with a system in general to overturn things.
At the same time, you look at college wrestling, right? On the same channel, you look at college wrestling, same time, a guy locked his hands. They went to instant replay, determined the locked hands, which I thought was a terrible way to end NCAA things, but that's what happened. He locked his hands, match is over. I mean, at the exact same time that happened, during the college wrestling, a guy locked his hands, which was an illegal...
This is illegal?
You can lock your hands, once you return the guy to the mat, you have to unlock your hands in college wrestling. So once he's on all fours, you have to unlock your hands.
That's so
The guy was on. There are plenty of judo rules that are weird too. All right, so so once they got to the mat, he unlocked. He didn't.
You're such a child.
you're a queen adult.
Stop looking at my arms.
I'm not looking at your arms. Okay, I'll look at your boobs. You have nice boobs. You have bigger arms though. Your arms are a D. Your boobs are. Listen. So.
Oh my God.
So the guy had to unlock his hands. And they went to instant replay. It didn't take. If a guy gets an injury timeout, they take 5 minutes. Okay, you deal with it. I'm just saying that's a way to make it foolproof.
I mean,
I don't know who would have to throw the towel. That's
true. So unhappy with this right now.
No, but I understand why, because you know a guy's career has taken a bump. From it, and I'm sure.
I thought Dober was going to lose anyway, personally. But whatever.
Whatever. But you know, it sucks. It sucks. But how often has this happened? It's the first time I think it's happened.
No, but there are a couple times where, like, a guy gets poked in the eyes, The ref doesn't see it. The guy covers his eyes, and then he gets clobbered over the head a couple times, and they stop the fight. Something like that would have...
If you're going to bitch and moan about getting poked in the eye, don't fight in a cage. It's fighting at the end of the day. I know it's illegal and the rest of it, but they try and do the best they can with those sort of situations. And if you get poked, you get poked, you swing with your eyes closed. Like, if you're going to back away and hold your... That's not a response. That's not a fighting response to getting poked in the eye. You don't go, oh wait, that hurt. You know... Try and deal with it. If the referee spots it, he spots it.
But like
it's the same in every
balls,
single sport.
Kicking a ball.
It's the same in every single sport. It's the same in every sport you look at. You look at soccer, well, football, you know, if you look at that, people get pushed over, they get elbowed, people go up for headers and they elbow each other and the referee doesn't see it. Someone gets a broken nose, whatever. Like, that's sport. Things happen in sport, and the best way to deal with it is not... You can't be 100% every single time. It just can't. It sucks to lose that way, and you... It's awful. It's fucking terrible. But there's not like... They're not going to admit a whole system now of instant replay and...
All right, so let's say you get subbed that way. You're Drew Dober.
Yeah, it sucks. It sucks. It right. sucks. It, fu- it sucks.
But at least you know that you didn't really lose. Dana White said
yeah,
this is the guy UFC,
should... No, and... I mean, I'm sure there'll be. I'm sure he'll get paid like the same way. I don't know if that guy should get paid. Is the disgusting thing here? Let's go. I know I'm going on and I'm going on a bit of a strange rant, but the disgusting.
No, because you're a fighter and you have to deal with refs like that.
Yeah,
you're absolutely entitled to your rant right now.
You're a fighter too.
I was, but I've been there cage side when my friend, a different on Cage Warriors, my friend Jack Mason got kicked in the head, and got dropped. He got kicked and dropped and turned all fours and went to stand up, and the referee stopped the fight, and I was like. Jack was fine, you know, absolutely fine, and he got stopped. It happened to him as well. He took a kick to the head and fell, and they called it a knockout. It wasn't a knockout. He just lost balance and fell over. You know, that's what happens in fights. So I've been through it, like, on a personal level as well. But the thing that's disgusting about the situation, in my opinion, is the way the guy who won reacted.
Oh, you know? Yeah, he was saying he felt the tap.
Yeah.
Yeah, how are you proud of that win?
Yeah.
How are you proud of that win? Like, that's how do you walk away from that and you see the replay up in the stands and you're really going to believe that?
Maybe he felt tap. Maybe it was a punch he felt and he thought it was a tap.
Well, maybe.
It doesn't matter,
maybe,
though.
But you've
but
seen
you can,
it.
Yeah, but you know you're wrong.
You're right.
You know you're wrong.
I can't
argue
that.
He's still walking away and he's saying, you know, a win is win. And then he jumps on the cage?
Yeah, that was weird.
What the fuck? Yeah.
That's
just because you're in Brazil?
You just go through puberty during that last rant.
What the fuck?
You know, that's like...
It's just like embarrassing.
Yeah, that was embarrassing.
That's fucking embarrassing.
So how's single life, by the way? Is it going?
It's fun. It's great.
Really? Ooh. Fun.
What about his single life?
She's single now.
What's his name? What was his name?
The tugboat guy.
Tugboat boy. Yeah,
tugboat man, by the way. He's not a boy. He came out here. He said he was a man.
He's a man.
It didn't work out. He ran away with some stripper.
Do you think now?
No, I'm kidding. That didn't happen. What?
Do you think the chances of meeting a man have now gone downhill since you've done this show and you sit next to him every week? And they know they're going to have to deal
right
with it.
You might be right about this.
Yeah.
I think thanks.
I'm kidding.
Come on. Give me a break. The men are lining up. You should see
no, they're
that.
Not.
They are too.
No, they're not.
A lot of men are lining up.
No, they're not.
Yes,
and you're
they
scaring
are.
Them all away.
Every single one of them. Marina's mine. She's all mine. If I can't have her, no one will. All right.
Was there any other fights on that
card? All right. I think I'm going to have to quit this podcast.
Awesome.
To try me a man.
No, all right. So Josh Koscheck, Eric Silva, which I said this was a bad idea. I don't understand how after getting choked out.
Maybe you should call Josh and tell him you should be his advisor.
He didn't seem that broken up about it. But listen, but that's what's sad about this. Let me talk for a second. Josh Koscheck, I don't understand what athletic commission lets a guy who gets choked out brutally with foam coming out of your mouth.
A Brazilian one.
2 weeks later, have a fight. That to me, that's wrong. I think you need time. Mm-hmm. I know that these fighters are super tough, especially a guy like Josh Koscheck. They have no quit in them. Sometimes people need to be saved from themselves. Okay, I said this is a bad idea. Now, that being said, he did look okay. He actually threw some crazy punches and wild punches and was landing, and he looked better than he did against Jake Ellenberger. However, he got caught in that same choke, which is grinding against a cage, not the exact same, but pretty much the same, the standing guillotine. And he went down, and you know what? It's kind of sad because when I think of Josh Koscheck, I think of the college wrestler Josh Koscheck, the guy who wins I think he's a four-time All-American, won it the national championship 2 years in a row. I think he lost his senior year in the finals, but he was still amazing. That Josh Koscheck who fought GSP twice, that rising star in the UFC, that force to be reckoned with. That dude who was knocking fools out at one point. His beautiful double leg. I don't like seeing Josh Koscheck after losing three in a row backstage going, yeah, you know, I think I did okay. It's like he has been content with losing. And you see it all the time with some of these legendary fighters. You see the Kevin Randlemans losing the last six in a row, the Gary Goodrich losing nine in a row. You see it with a lot of these guys where they just, it's sort of a paycheck. They're content with losing. And personally, I don't like seeing that because I look up,
really
I put these guys on a pedestal.
Do you really think it's the content of losing, or do you think that that these guys who have been fighting these crazy wars for years, they're just doing it for the thrill? I'm sorry. Yes, the paycheck does come after, but there's something inside of you that, like, you get addicted to that rush.
You get you like the attention.
You get a paycheck after, right? That's a guaranteed. But they do it for the thrill. Like, this is a very short-lived business. And a lot of fighters don't have opportunities after fighting, and they don't have an exit strategy, and they're just going to enjoy it just how they want to, and he's just one of those fighters.
I understand I totally understand that. But I understand when I wrestled in high school and college, it was my life. It was my life. And when I quit, I felt like I was nothing. I felt like I had lost everything. Like, everyone who saw me was like, How's wrestling? Oh, champ. And then you miss that, and you feel like you got nothing going for you.
Okay, look past that, though. He was a wrestler.
Okay.
And then he went into another sport.
I understand that, but you're missing my point, which is that I do think that, A, there needs to be some sort of better financial advising going for these guys if it's for a paycheck. Maybe they need to see a therapist, a sports psychologist, saying, listen, you're not just a fighter. You know, you got to look at the bigger picture. Maybe there needs to be some kind of program where after fighters lose, they set them up with coaching jobs or training jobs or UFC gym jobs, whatever it is. I understand these people need that validation, but it sucks because at what expense? There's going to be brain damage. There's losing. There's going to be this, that. Luke, want to weigh in?
Yeah, I mean, it's such a strange subject to talk about, but it is true. I mean, the one that came to my mind when you were talking about, you know, I don't like seeing Josh Koscheck. I like seeing Josh Koscheck, the wrestler, the guy doubling. I thought Anderson Silva. That's who I thought. Anderson Silva knocking out Forrest Griffin. Mm-hmm. I want to remember him like that, not like the tarnished guy that he is now with the drugs and all, you know, the broken leg and everything that's going on. And it happens to everyone. Like Marina said, short-lived sport. This sport, it will happen to the best in the world. They will become not the best in the world, and they will get beat, and they will get beat repetitively. At the end of the day, the sport, it keeps growing, it keeps getting better, the athletes keep getting better, and Josh was one of the best in the world. He's not anymore, you know? And I don't believe he's doing it for a paycheck. I think he made a hell of a lot of money in his career, and I don't know if he wasted it or whatever, but I don't think he's doing it for a paycheck. I think he's doing it for what Marina said, and it's that the feeling I try to put it as. It might be different for this second fight. I'm not so sure about the second fight, but when you're preparing for a fight and you're a week away, 2 weeks away, and you're in the best shape you can be in, and you're, you know, you feel untouchable. You feel in that place where I can't be better than this at the moment. That's how I feel when I get ready for fights, when you go towards fights, when you're in that shape. And having that feeling of being in that sort of condition and putting all of that thing into everything into that sport and anything that you love is such a strange feeling that not many people get to have. And then you get to walk out in front of thousands of people and live it, you know? And I think that's what he misses, and that's what he's trying to get back, is that feeling, not so much the attention, people like, oh, he needs the attention. It's not the attention, it's the internal feeling of putting everything you have into something.
Yeah.
You
know? Mm-hmm.
And I think people need to learn to find another thing to put everything into, which is what you were trying to say, which is a great idea, you know? It's a great idea to think, oh, okay, mate, but to get to this point, to get to where we are as athletes, where Josh Koscheck has been, to fight GSP and have those fights you spoke about, there has to be something slightly wrong with you. You know, like you have to really want something. And if you get to that level of wanting something, believing in something and pushing yourself that far, you can't just switch it off, you know? And that's why you saying that you need someone to, you know, someone to protect them from themselves, you know, let them do what they want to do. He's earned the right. In my eyes, Josh Koscheck has earned the right to fight whoever he wants, whenever he wants, however he wants.
Yeah, so what about 10 years from now when he's
so what?
When he's
that's
got
his
brain
choice.
Damage?
Yeah, that's his choice.
Responsibility. That is his responsibility.
But what about when he's drooling? I mean, and he and the guy can't tie his shoes.
Yeah, I mean, but
does that mean he's not happy?
Come on.
With what he's done in his life. People can't say that they have done what he has done in the sport and in life. So maybe he's just living out the rest of his dreams and everything that he's capable of doing physically.
Yeah, like, and I'll watch it. And I'll watch, yeah, I'll watch it.
And let's take it back to
And I'll root for him. But like Jens Pulver's fighting or fought recently. And I mean, nobody should be given – I'm sorry, but you know, you don't want to see fatalities in the sport. You don't want to see guys get severe brain damage.
I mean,
and I understand, well, he's earned the right to get severe brain damage is what you're saying.
Well,
okay.
No, because he's not going to get severe brain damage.
No,
you know, he got choked unconscious twice. You train MMA every single day, you're going to get choked out a few times. You know, that happens. So what the point you were trying to make is that you don't want to see it happen. You're a fan. You know, yeah. I'm a fan of the sport. I'm a fan of Koscheck. You don't want to see the guy turn into this guy. But that is what happens.
That's part of it.
Life. You know, you peak, you become the best, and then you're gonna fall. The guys that are at the top of the sport right now, one day they won't be the best.
But then they should set them up with like.
Shouldn't do anything. They shouldn't. Who's they? Who are you talking about? It's up to the
UFC.
Individual.
They should set them up with like Koscheck, Diego Sanchez. If they want to fight, yeah. You know, I mean. Eventually, if you're going to have guys like Koscheck still around and some of the other guys still around,
maybe have that.
Maybe have the Kimbo Slice, Ken Shamrock.
But they're not going to want to do that, you know. And the UFC doesn't want to be a part of that, and that's just not going to happen, you know. Like, I know what you're trying to say, and I agree with a lot of things you're trying to say. Like trying to set them up, but it just doesn't. Life doesn't work like that. At the end of the day, for me, MMA or the UFC, however you want to look at it, is like. A physical representation of life. Like,
yeah.
That's what it is.
No,
that's
so
what
like when
the sport
I used to work
is.
Cruise ships, right? I used to work cruise ship, and they bring on these comics. At one point, we're on Johnny Carson and had that glim in their eye. And then now they're up there and they're telling, like, two Jews walk into a bar, mitzvah, you know, or like and jokes they get off the internet. And I'm sitting there going, oh, like this guy at one point, and that's what these guys are sort of becoming. And there's always that chance that Koscheck wins. He fucking connects with that, right? He may knock out Eric Silva. There's always that chance. And the guy, you know, he asked Dana White for the fight. Dana says, you know what? He's a name. He wants to fight. Let him fight. I get it. It just sort of as a fan.
It sucks.
You know, you're used to looking at a guy a certain way. When they lose four or five fights in a row. I mean, you look at all these legends, their Sherdog accounts. You see eight losses in a row and seven losses in a row. Even guys like Baroni, you know, who I love Baroni. You see six losses in a row. I mean, yeah, I like seeing that Phil Baroni.
Mark Munoz, four losses in a row.
Yeah, you know.
No, I know, but that's what I think is great for the fans. They get to see the growth. The problem with the fans is they jump aboard to another ship, but they get to see the growth. They get to see people.
I jump on ships. Who's the one who interviews fucking Gary Goodrich's and Jens Pulver and Mark Coleman? Marina just pointed to me like I jump on ships. Are you
that
out of
was
your
easy.
Fucking mind?
That was if there was a that was easy button.
I'm about to go jump on your fucking boyfriend's ship on the tugboat, and that's the only ship I'm jumping on.
But listen.
I'm jumping on ships. Give me these other fucking. Podcast, you know who they interview? The people fighting this week. I'm interviewing Rob Van Dam. Okay, I'm interviewing.
Talking about weed. He wants to legalize weed worldwide.
That was a little strange.
Worldwide.
Okay, but I'm interviewing people after they've long forgotten. I'm not a bandwagoner.
No way.
You feel better now?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
I agree.
You want a cigarette or something? Jesus.
I want
Christ.
Some Rob Van Dam weed.
Jesus Christmas.
He's gonna brand that now and make millions.
He should.
But no, like, my point is, get you to appreciate the now. Like, I know it sounds strange, and I sound like a bit of a fairy, but you get to look at these guys that have gone through that stage, and now you get to look at the people that are doing it right now, the guys that are the best in the world right now. And it means so much more to me when you get to see that these people are actually human, because the Koscheks, the other people, you see them fail, you see them fall, and the guys that are fighting right now and being world champion and destroying everyone and looking unbeatable, they actually are right now, you know, and that you can see it's not going to last forever. They should cherish it, and the fans should cherish it, and they should look after the people while they're there, because one day you never know where you're going to be. And that the sport is, as Marina said again, is short-lived. And I think it's great. Like, it sounds weird. I don't think it's great that Koscheck's going out there and getting beaten or something, but it's nice to see that these people are human and that they – they can lose a fight, you know?
You have a very intelligent British perspective on this.
Yeah, but I mean, I'm trying to sound, I'm not like going all, I don't know, it's like I've been smoking weed and thinking deep about it. Like,
I understand. But, I think know, that's very admirable. Where's your girlfriend go, by the way?
I have no idea. She left because you were perving at her.
I was not perving at her. She's wearing clothes this week. The last time she was here, she's wearing like a pasties. Yeah. Anyway, so.
But yeah, it's that's what makes the sport so special. I know it sounds...
No, I hear you. No, I it does feel special. It's just sort of like you just, you know, you watch the NCAAs, you see these guys. I remember watching Koscheck and that, and then you see his journey and the Ultimate Fighter and this and that, and then losing four fights in a row and going, you know what, I think I did some good things in this fight, and like, you didn't get out of the first round, you know, and you're sort of seeing a guy who's sort of broken and I respect it. I enjoy watching it, but at the same time, you have to look at the fact, like, you know, we haven't seen 10 years from now. It is a new sport. We haven't seen the type of brain damage these guys can get. And yeah, no one's forcing them to get into an octagon. No one's forcing them to walk into a MMA gym. Nobody's, a lot of these guys are, you know, Koscheck went to a 4-year college. You could do a lot of things. You can do a lot of things, Josh. He chose to be an MMA fighter.
Exactly.
At the same time, you know, I think it's...
If you got him on the podcast today, would he regret the things that he's done?
Probably not.
He's, you know, and that's what you got to look at. Like, I'm not being up and down, but in life, you have got to take the good with the bad. You know what I mean? He's had some fucking good times, and now he's having some not so good times.
Right. Speaking of good times, we have Derek Brunson. We're going to call him right now. I know that I'm jumping on the Brunson bandwagon, according to my co-host, Marina.
You're so butthurt all the time.
I am not butthurt.
All the time.
Just with your butt. You have a nice butt.
Oh, my God.
No, you have like a booty.
No.
You don't think you have a booty?
I don't want to talk about this right now.
A badonkadonk?
She does have a badonkadonk. Like, honestly, you could make 125 if you didn't have that butt.
You could. Probably could make 125 if I didn't have my ass.
Yeah. You definitely have a 20-pound ass.
Brunson.
Is that part going to be Brunson on the podcast?
Hello?
Hey, Derek Brunson.
What's going on?
What's going on? You're on the MMA Roasted podcast. It's me, Marina Shafir.
What's
Luke,
up?
Luke Barnott. How's it going, man?
Barnott. That's my joke.
Barnott, but you can't say it probably. Don't worry about it.
So, Derek, you're killing it, man. You won the last 4 out of 5 fights. That last fight you won, you did a crazy dance afterwards. I've never seen that dance before. Where did you learn that?
It's something called a whip, you know. That's what we do. That's a little urban dance, you know. So that's probably why you never seen it before.
That's like Ghost Ride the Whip. That's kind of what that was.
That can be your spin on it.
now you're killing it, man. And by the way, you are hilarious on Twitter. You have some of the funniest tweets, which is why I always put you in that group text chat. Because I think you're very underrated as far as your humor goes.
I actually got more humor than I show. But, you know, being that, obviously, being a professional athlete, you're under a little, everybody's, you know, watching and paying attention. So I really can't, you know, go too crazy. But, yeah, I got a little humor.
Now, so exactly. Like, one of your last tweets that you wrote, you said... You said you were watching some kind of show about swinging, Neighbors with Benefits.
Oh, yeah.
You wrote, y'all go ahead and share your ladies. I'm stingy as fuck. Sorry, I didn't learn how to share in kindergarten. So,
correct.
You're not really into swinging?
No, I'm not sharing my chick. Wow, are you a swinger?
No, not at all. I'm not sharing either. Yeah.
He's lying right now.
No, I've never swung.
I think he's lying.
And then also, you ran into your ex-girlfriend. She asked, where are you moving to? And you said, on to better things.
Oh, shit. That's...
Oh, yeah. No, I just dropped little quotes here and there, you know?
Okay.
That one had no meaning behind it.
Yeah.
Also known as knowledge, dropping little quotes of knowledge.
There you go.
Now, you also wrote, if CM Punk walks out with Pettis, you want to walk out with The Undertaker.
Yeah, what's wrong with that?
Nothing wrong. And then you went off about, like, Ronda Rousey. You said, you're a beast and all, but you will not beat men in your weight class in the UFC. Girl, bye.
She's good, of course. Ronda Rousey's an absolute beast. Like, she might armbar me, but I'm going to pick her up and curl her, you know? But yeah, of course, you know, she's one of the most dominant women, or the most dominant women ever. You know, she's really talented. But you know, talking about guys in her weight class, that fight UFC, she wouldn't beat those guys.
So yeah, so you don't think that she would beat TJ Dillashaw or a Barao or any of those guys?
Hell no, no.
Yeah, I happen to agree with you on that one. Now, I remember last time you were on the podcast, we talked about oral sex. You said that you've never went down on a girl before, that you refused to go down on chicks. Has that still happened?
Wow, did I say that?
Yeah.
Are you making this up?
You probably did, because those are the kinds of things that Adam remembers most.
No, you know, you did. You said that you refused to go down on girls, which I think that's horrible.
Damn, son. I don't even know what's going on. I don't know how to answer that, because if I said that before, then, you know,
it's obviously changed. Things have changed.
So things have changed. So now you go down all the time. You're just into eating vagina. That's what your thing now?
No, that's not what I'm saying. I don't remember the conversation. So, in other words, I'm not going to speak on it.
Really? Because remember last time you were like, "Hell no, I don't do that shit." But and then a lot of people complained about that.
You know what? You know what? Let's talk about it a little bit. Last time you might have asked me, was I like just a compulsive vagina eater? And that's when I was like, no, I'm not. And that was the end of the story, from what I can remember.
Okay. No, I'm not.
Okay, so you're not a compulsive vagina eater, but you will from time to time go downtown if it smells right, right? Do you do the old one finger in, sniff, and then pretend to yawn?
On the belly button test.
What did Luke say? What are the rest of you guys have to say?
I say
that?
You got to do the belly button test.
What's that?
The belly button test. If it starts stinking like right up there, then don't go downtown.
So you,
that's what all my guy friends have told me.
So guys smell your belly button?
No, not me. I have like two older brothers, and all of them have friends, and all of them have like been at a table talking about it, and they say they're gonna kiss the girl's stomach, and if it starts smelling funky, they are going right back up north.
Mm. Now, when you had your lesbian experiences,
oh my god, move on.
Oh, okay, all right,
move on.
Because Marina,
move on.
Okay. I won't
move on.
I move on.
I will fuck you up.
I know you will.
Okay.
Okay. All
right. I'll protect you. Let's go.
Thank you. Okay. Really. All right. So Marina, Marina has made out with girls before.
Oh my god.
But she's never. Did you go down on the girl or no? Did you do the belly button test?
No.
Okay. All right. All right.
You turned to the Howard Stern show.
No, not at all.
That's exactly the dynamic of the show, though.
Thank you. All right. So, Derek, who do you want to fight next?
I want to fight everybody. It doesn't matter to me, honestly. To tell you, I like to think of things from a business standpoint, and obviously, MMA is my business, you know. And if I had another business, I'm not just going to go out there and do the craziest of things. But I look at it like this. I fought the number 2 ranked guy at middleweight. I fought the number 5 ranked guy at middleweight, you know. So I don't know. I just need to keep getting better. That's all I care about right now. As long as I keep getting better, I think the rest will take care of itself. So I'm in no like huge rush, you know. I'm more concerned with getting consistent fights, you know, than who I fight, you know. I think a couple more fights, you know, then I'm ready to start calling people out. But, just trying to stay consistent, you know. Just keep getting fights, you know.
You're right there. Now, one of the guys you did lose to, you were winning. I mean, Yoel Romero, before you fought him, was on a huge pedestal. People were really scared of him. I think you kind of made out the blueprint to beating him. You had him beat 2 rounds. I mean, you out-wrestled this guy. Yeah. I think people really forgot how good of a wrestler you were, and that last round he caught you, which was like, oh, so heartbreaking, because you were right there. He did shit his pants during that fight. How much did that affect the fight?
Melly situation. That didn't affect the fight. But of course, my wrestling's really good. You know, I went to a D2 school, and I was a 3-time All-American there, and a lot of smaller schools don't get a lot of credit, but at the end of the day, it's 2 people in front of each other and you're wrestling. You know, some people have better coaches who are going to teach them better material, but just because you went to a D2 versus D1 school, that don't necessarily make you the better wrestler. And yeah, my wrestling's really good. You know, that's my strongest attribute. So I was definitely confident in that Romero fight. And like you said, he did catch me in the third round. I would think I would have won the fight 30-27.
Yeah.
Given the last minute and a half.
Yeah, you were right there. It was that was heartbreaking. Now he's fighting Jacare. Yeah. You fought both those guys. Who do you think wins in that fight?
I think Romero would beat Jacare pretty easily. I mean, that's just my opinion, though. I think Romero will win. I think Jacare probably have a hard time keeping up with his speed. Jacare isn't very fast. He just, he's pretty strong. He's a strong middleweight, but I wouldn't say he's very fast. Romero is very fast and dynamic, and he moves around a lot. So.
Now, there have been kind of grumblings at Jacare. His body has sort of transformed over the years. and he's become sort of this bodybuilder now, which is weird at age, you know, late 30s, you kind of blossom into this strongman. Any comment on that?
You know what? I'm not going to sit up here and just call people out if they haven't been tested positive. But, I mean, come on. You can look at somebody and tell what they're about. You know, I think it's a joke. So I'm really liking that a lot of guys are getting busted, you know, with the new PED enhanced testing. And I hope that it continues. Everybody continue to get tested a lot because it's just ridiculous, you know. If you can't go out there and fight like a man and go in the gym and, you know, lift weights because you want to be strong and have a lot of power, then, you know, you don't deserve to be knocking people out, you know. So, I mean, you know, I think everybody should work hard for whatever they get, and I'm a proponent of that.
Luke, any questions for Derek?
Yeah, I mean, what's up, Derek? You all right?
What's up, man? How are you?
I'm good. I was going to say about the old fight as well. Like, well, obviously, when do you want to fight next? Because you said you want to fight real quick, and it's your last fight was in January, so it's been a little while. Are you, if you're not booked, are you booked up already? You don't have to tell us who, but if you are booked up or...
No, I don't have anything, you know.
Any
cards
you want to fight
now? Just kind of waiting until someone gives me a fight.
Any cards you like the look of? Anywhere you want to fight in particular?
Oh, no, like nobody particularly. I don't really care. It doesn't matter. Obviously, I just want to take a fight that makes sense. And I guess at any time where I can get a 6-week training camp, then I'll be good to fight. So
you stay in shape all the time and you just need the 6 weeks to get prime, right?
Yeah. And 6 weeks, that'd be average.
You said about Yol, obviously because he's got the fight coming up, so we're kind of talking about him a little bit. And the thing I noticed about him is, like you said, very, very fast and unorthodox and explosive. Like, but do you feel like when he fights Souza or Jacare, he's going to be able to handle the ground game? Because he doesn't seem to do a lot on the ground, and you've been on the ground with him, and, you know, do you think he's going to be able to out-grapple him on the floor?
That might be the X factor, you know. I don't know how much or how good Yoel's jiu-jitsu is, you know, from top position. I don't really see Jacare taking him down. I really, really don't. I think, you know, I don't think Jacare even gets close to taking him down. But you never know. It's a fight, you know. Anything can happen. You know, he can set up some punches good and shoot a double leg. So, but that might be the X factor, you know. I believe that he pretty much easily deals with Jacare on the feet. I think he takes him down whenever he wants. But the thing is, when he does take him down, if you take him down, what does it look like? Him in Jacare's guard. Does Jacare lock up a Kimura? You know, does he sweep him? Does he get on top? And obviously, you know how good his jiu-jitsu is.
Yeah, because, I mean, Yol, for me, his style, it's like the weirdest style in the UFC, because he'll go all out on the feet with the strangest strikes in the world, jumping knees, flying elbows, whatever. Then he'll gas and grab hold of you. Because he's got such good wrestling, he manages to get you to the floor, and then he just kind of lays on you like a turtle and then get up and then go over again, you know? So I wonder if he panics against Jacare, goes for the takedown, and then he has to work on the floor, you know, like actually has to do something on the ground to keep, and then he could gas out. I mean, that's how I look at it. I don't know who's going to win. You've been in the cage with both of the guys and have a much better outlook than I do, but I can see that if you can continue the fight with him, like if you can keep pushing the fight, pushing the pace, he looks like he'll gas.
Yeah. But you know what? Funny enough, though, that's kind of like a fight. That's like the beauty of a fight. Like, obviously, he has power. So if a guy try to rush and push the pace, then he might hit him with the kitchen sink. You know, so it's kind of like, you know, you got to kind of be strategic about it. You know, maybe you have to let him last a little bit longer rather than, you know, I don't know. A guy like you would be, you know, difficult because you got the length and you can, you know, really get active early and, you know, make them work towards the end. But, you know, just for, you know, average guy, I can see it being, you know, problematic.
Yeah, you don't want to get hit with a kitchen sink, especially by Yoel Romero. I mean, he throws some power.
Oh, man. Now, are you training with John Jones all the time?
Whenever I'm in Albuquerque, I am. So before when I get a fight lined up, I head out there to Albuquerque, and I'll be about 5 to 6 weeks in.
Did you guys party together back in the day? Or?
Yeah, me and John hang out all the time. Just me and John, we just hang out and go and hang out. That's it. You know, we go out, and that's about it.
Really? You guys aren't like, I mean, I know you two are going like just probably just plowing chicks in Albuquerque, right? I mean, it's probably, you know, Brunson and Jones Central. You guys are just kind of hitting the town. All bets are off, right? Is it crazy
days?
Nah, we
just hanging out, man. That's it. We just go hang out and then.
Can you just entertain him and, like, maybe just nicely lie to him? Please? He just wants to hear that you guys are getting all the chicks every day, tag teaming it, high-fiving every weekend. That's what he wants to hear.
John has a fiance. So
you guys aren't Eiffel Towering girls?
Nah.
Did you forget, got, like, a fiance?
All right, so John has a fiance and a family.
Yeah.
Now, when that whole thing happened with John Jones, as far as, you know, with the cocaine and everything, were you one of the guys he went to? Did you give him advice? You say, listen, man, calm down. You got the whole world. Were you like, hey, man, don't worry. You'll get over this. Did you kind of big brother him a little bit?
Yeah, I mean, I talk to him, I exchange texts with him, you know, just let him know I got his back, and, you know, obviously you have to make smarter decisions than that, because, you know, obviously I'm not about that. I never have been, you know, and I'll be quick to tell someone when they're wrong, so, you know, that's all. Just a little encouragement and just like, hey, what are you doing? You know, make better decisions.
Now, if you've talked to John, because he blocked me on Twitter for making jokes about him.
He did?
If you could tell him I'm sorry, I'm a big fan, and we'd love to have him on the show.
Awesome.
I got another question.
Hey, some people can't take a joke, I guess. I saw you and King Mo going at it one time.
Yeah. King Mo got up. I had to call King Mo and be like, hey, man, I was kidding. He's like, who is this? I'm like, he goes, I don't even know who I'm talking to. And then he was actually super nice about it. I find that, you know, I mean, it's hard. I'm in a tough situation where, you know, guys, you know, comedy is about, you know, making fun of guys who are doing really well. You know, John Jones, King Mo, those guys are on the top of their game, so they're kind of fodder for jokes. So, and it's hard because a guy gets caught with cocaine, there's so many jokes there. A guy pokes people in the eyes, so many jokes. And it's, you know, King Mo opens himself, and he takes himself so seriously that it's fun to make fun of him. Yeah. At the same time, you know, sometimes people get upset. But if you talk to John Jones, tell him I'm actually a really big fan.
He just wants to be able to DM him now on a regular.
Yeah, right. So now, what about you? Do you have a girlfriend? You married? What's going on?
Man, I have a girlfriend.
Nice. What does she look like?
What does she look like? She's Puerto Rican and pretty.
Oh, Puerto Rican. Nice.
Jesus Christ, sit down.
Those are the best girls in bed. I swear to God, I've been with a couple Puerto Rican chicks. Am I right? Did she go, ay, papi,
yeah,
Mr. Brunson?
Yes. Player.
Really?
What?
Do you give her the Brunson burner?
Give her the Brunson burner?
Yeah.
What is that? My college coach referred to me as Brunson burner, whatever.
I don't know. It was like the Brunson burner was like this science project.
It's the Bunsen burner.
Oh, it's the Bunsen burner.
Oh, right. There you go. That's what he called me, Brunson.
So
I'm like, yo, burner doesn't sound good with anything. You know?
So. Yeah, you don't want to give a girl a burner. She may have to get tested afterwards.
Yeah,
that's rough. So you have a girlfriend now. Do you have any kids or no?
Yeah, I have two daughters.
Two daughters, and how old are they?
7 and 8.
Now, is it hard for them to watch you fight?
Nah, my little girls are really active and they like to wrestle and stuff like that. So they understand it as a sport, you know. So they always watch it on like DVR. I'm like. Right after something like that.
Oh, good. Are you going to get them into jiu-jitsu or?
Probably not. I don't know. I'm thinking maybe some like Muay Thai, something like that. That'd be cool.
That'd be awesome.
I don't know. Whatever they want to do, you know?
Cool.
So we'll see.
What do they think of like your dance afterwards?
Well, they love it. They're like, oh, my daddy, you're. They just like doing a dance all the time.
that is so cute. Now back in North Carolina in college, you must have been the man, right? You're a four-time All-American. It's a smaller school. Were you the big man on campus?
I was. Yes, I was, too.
Nice.
You used to run that shit. I got a question. I was talking about the guys earlier. Obviously, you tried out for the season of the Ultimate Fighter that I was on with all the guys.
Right.
And you couldn't get on there. I think it was a contractual thing with Strikeforce, right?
They were racist.
Yeah. racist. They said they had like four black guys on there. They were racist as hell.
Yeah, and you did you have to? I was trying to remember the memory, but we all had like food in this big room together. And was that like after making weight? Did you have to make weight? And then they got off the show after. So they forced you to make weight. Then they said you couldn't fight.
Well, when we were going back and forth, making the sauna runs, whatever, I was down to weight. And right when we got to the place where we were about to weigh in, like 30 minutes before, that's when the producer came and was like, hey, you know, Strikeforce, we've been trying up until the last minute to get you released. Strikeforce won't release you right now, blah, blah, blah. And she said, but you still can weigh in just in case we can talk with somebody and they can let you, they'll let you, you know. And I think it was, they had some big storm in, like, New York. I think the Strikeforce, or somebody was stranded in, like, a big storm. And it was, like, the big rainstorm they had up north. And the person wasn't able to be reached. So I was just kind of, like, left out there. So they had to, like, start the show, obviously. So,
And do you feel like you missed out not being on the show, or do you just prefer just going into the UFC the way you did it, or like, how do you feel about that?
I don't know. It was okay. I mean, either way would have been good. You know, obviously for the show, you guys got a lot of publicity, whatever. You know, it was great for your PR. So that's the only thing. You know, that it would have sold me a little more with that. But I guess I can't complain too much.
Did you watch the show?
Yeah, I watched it. It was good.
Yeah, who was your favorite member on the show?
What did you say?
Who was your favorite cast member on the show?
Who was my favorite? What did you say, Luke?
Oh, you're such a cheese ball.
There we go. That's what I wanted. Nice one, Derek.
I was watching this show like, man, honestly, when we all tried out, I was like, man, we got some really good guys right here. This could be like the best Ultimate Fighter ever, just for the personalities. And watching Gil dumbass walk around all naked, was, you know, I was like, I'm glad I wasn't on this show. But
who?
But Gilbert I don't know. Smith. It had a lot of people. Like Bubba was a big crybaby. You know, you got Clint, Lana Boy, just, you know. I don't know. You know, it was
Kelvin,
a lot of personalities.
Kelvin, so Kevin. Kevin Casey, that was a good season.
It was by far, you know, not being biased, but it was the best season of all time. So let's.
It was a good season. It was surprising. I mean, Uriah Hall losing to Kelvin Gastelum. A lot of people lost money on that one. Mm-hmm. A lot of people lost money on that one. So listen, Derek, you're hilarious on Twitter. You're a great guy. You're a good role model. You're guiding John Jones in the right direction. What I do think, though, is you got to start calling people out, because you look at the guys. I mean,
yeah.
Luke Rockhold, Machida. Who do you like in that fight?
Who I like in that fight? You know what? I might go to Rockhold.
I think so, too.
I think just that. I don't think he's going to knock him out or anything. I think with the activity. Rockhold does a good job of keeping the pace high and, you know, high output. So I'm going to have to go to Rockhold on that one.
Weidman, Belfort.
Weidman, Belfort. I'm going to have to go with Weidman on that one.
Barnett Munoz.
Oh, you fighting Munoz, huh? I think I'm going Barnett.
There you go.
You're going Barnett. Okay. Marina Shafir versus... Ronda versus Bess Correa.
I'm going with Ronda.
Yeah, that's a good. She's a 15-1 favorite. Jessica I versus Misha Tate.
I haven't seen much of Jessica I, but I have to go with Misha Tate. She's pretty tough.
I hope not. Just because if she wins, she's going to get the third fight against Ronda. If Ronda beats Betch, I think it's going to happen. And I think Ronda has just too much for Misha. I think she's mentally broken.
I don't know. You know what? I can kind of see what you're saying, but I think if Misha, you know, comes down to Greg Jackson, I think we're looking at a good fight then, you know? I think one of these chicks need to get smart and get some game plan. Like, who in the hell told
Cat,
you know, watch this, you go out there and just, you know, run at Ronda like that. You know, she put like so much time into that, and I know she trained hard and worked hard, and to let it, to just go out there and just do that, that was awful.
But you do think there's a girl out there that's going to beat Ronda?
Do I think there's a girl? Of course, eventually, you know. I mean, Kat is tough. You know, it's like, you know, Ronda is really good. You can't make mistakes against her. If you do stupid stuff like keep your hands around her head, your limbs out, you know, or run at her and, you know, get into a scramble. I mean, obviously when you're in a scramble, you need to stay tight with somebody that good at an arm bar. So, you know, I think it's little things that we can see more out of fights, you know, because nobody has been able to push.
So Ronda versus Cyborg.
Ooh. I mean, honestly, I can't bet against Ronda at this point.
Marina, would you like to weigh in? Marina, by the way, Marina Shafir is Ronda Rousey's roommate, who's our co-host. Would you like to weigh in on this?
No. I'm liking which way he's going right now.
Yeah, I mean, for real, I can't bet against. What are you fight to, Maria, right? You're like 3-0 or something like that?
No, I'm actually 1-1.
1-1? Okay, yeah. I don't know. Okay, all right, well, I was wrong. But either way, Rousey's tough, you know. Even if Cyborg, I think, you know what, funny enough, if Cyborg would have just came to the UFC about a year ago and started complaining about the weight, you know, I mean, I think we would have, that would have been a better chance for her to get Ronda, but Ronda just keep getting better and better, so.
Yeah. What about Ronda versus your Puerto Rican girlfriend?
Say that again?
Your Puerto Rican girlfriend against Ronda.
I'm going to say my Puerto Rican girlfriend, because I'm going to jump in. I see my girl get her ass whooped in front of everybody. Come on. That makes me look bad as a unit.
That's true. I'm telling you, man, Puerto Rican girls know how to move their butts, though. They do, right? they know how to. I mean,
right.
They're on top of you, and they just know when to. They have great timing.
Oh, okay.
They have great hip timing.
Great setups.
Listen, Derek Brunson, it was an honor having you on. We are big fans. Where can people find you?
Everywhere. I don't know. Where you want to come to my house? Nah. You can find me on Twitter at Derek Brunson. Instagram, The One Brunson. Facebook, Derek Brunson. Not my personal page, my athlete page. And that's about it.
Well, thank you for coming on the show, man.
And no worries. Thanks for having me.
Take care.
Awesome, Derek. Bye. Take it easy. Bye.
All right, later, guys.
And next week we have Henzo Gracie and Ryan LaFlair on the podcast.
We have Henzo Olsen coming on?
Yes.
Yeah, I love Henzo.
Have you met him?
Yeah.
You guys
he
friends?
He gave me my purple belt.
Really?
Yeah.
What was that like?
It was cool. I went down to New York City for the belt promotion because my head jiu-jitsu coach was like really big on me meeting him, and it was right before I moved to California. And I come up to the belt promotion and he's like, oh my God, you look exactly like Ronda. And I'm like, okay, thanks, dude.
Really?
Yeah, it was cool though. He was really nice.
People say you guys look alike. I don't see it though.
No, when we're like next to each other, we look like we're fucking related. The way we talk, it's the same.
Hmm.
Yeah.
The arms. You left yourself open.
Dude,
Come on, man.
By the way, next week I got to tell a story. I forgot to tell a story about how I got sued for $20 million when I was in college. Somebody told me I was telling the podcast.
You should talk about it.
I will. So remind me next week.
You got $20 million?
I got sued. No, it went to the Supreme Court of Brooklyn, but it got thrown to the court. But it's a funny story. Also, next week we're going to have MMA Roasted t-shirts.
You
can buy off my website, adamhunter.com. There's no fights this week, huh? I enjoyed watching the Titan FC fights last week. And congrats to Pat Healy on winning the belt. Love that guy. Fought a tough guy and won. He grinded it out. Fought a guy that I think was a better athlete than him. And Pat's just tougher. Sometimes guys are just tougher, you know?
Pat, I mean, I've trained with Pat. He's a real tough dude. Obviously, I'm a lot bigger than him. But my training partner, John McGuire, they went at it and sparred for his fight a long time ago in the UFC, and yeah, Pat's been around a long, long time, and if he wasn't just like Van Damme and loved the weed, he'd probably be making big money. He's done well, and he's crazy good. You know, one of the guys that's floating around now, and he's still a tough dude and can beat a lot of the guys out there. So
I said the fight was like him, ugly and hard to watch, mm-hmm. and he actually tweeted that, and he goes, "That's very true." He's a good sport. He's a good sport. So next week we'll talk about Khabib. By the way, he's going crazy on Twitter. A lot of things to talk about, but Evan, by the way, we're having 5 more podcasts this week. No kidding. Evan, if it was up to, well, listen, Evan does a great job. He's our unsung hero here. Evan the Beard. So if you see Evan the Beard,
give him a pat on the back.
Give him a pat on the
For
back.
Sure, don't touch me.
don't touch him.
He will fuck you up.
You could see Evan on Tinder.
Some elbow. Some elbow.
So Marina, where can people find you?
Marina Shafir everywhere.
Yes, and Luke.
At Luke Barnett, wherever you want to look, and hit me up.
Hit you up. And at Adam Comedian, I will be at the Irvine Improv this Tuesday, at the Hollywood Improv this Wednesday night.
Oh yeah, how come you were in San Diego the weekend? You didn't even.
I was there one night, just all one right. night. All right. And well, then I will be next this week. I'm in the Looney Bin in Wichita, Kansas.
Ooh.
Wichita, Kansas, at the Looney Bin Thursday to Saturday. Hopefully you can come to a show. Take care, guys, and have a great week.
Bye-bye.